Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Science of Light, and this is Randy Goldberg, and we'll start out with a song by the Navaneelananda. It's available on innersong.com. A lot of great meditation.
Thank you.
Hi there, this is Randy Goldberg. Welcome you to the Science Light Show. And you can find out more about me at astrodc.com or randygoldberg.org. And tonight we're going to be delving into some of the basics of Eastern philosophy and share a little bit about the wisdom of yoga. Yoga is a thousands-of-year-old science, art, practice, spiritual exploration that was developed thousands of years ago in India and the Himalayas. Humans, practitioners of yoga, they're called yogis, spent lifetimes experimenting in the inner laboratory. And in the East, they have a very developed inner science, whereas in the West, we have a very developed outer science. And what's needed today is a bridging and a sharing and a coming together of the two systems of knowledge. And we need to bring the world out of balance and share the gifts of all the cultures and all the wisdom traditions all around the world. So in yoga, yoga actually means to become one, to yoga together, unity, basic principle of yoga is to discover the underlying oneness of all consciousness, sometimes referred to your higher self, and in yoga philosophy they talk about how there's a cycle of creation that started with infinite consciousness. And it's not known what caused creation to start. And there's many different interesting, amusing stories. You know, you can think of it as God got bored, or, you know, God wanted to dance with himself, herself, and God enjoyed the drama. There's no real knowing what happened before the beginning, but at a certain stage there arose a wave out of this pure consciousness, and that created at the beginning a triangulation of forces, starting from the subtlest energy that there is, which is considered sattva-guna. It's a Sanskrit word for sentient energy, energy that is very pure and subtle and uplifting. And they consider that, that all the everything in the universe is made up of a mixture of these three energies. And then there was mutative energy, which is moving in action. And then there was tamasic energy, which is grounding and binding, solid. And these energies sprang forth, and consciousness started to solidify and come slowly in the West. There's a tradition of four elements. And in the West, in the East, they have a tradition of five elements. So the fifth element would be ether or space. But space is where these elements got created in. And then there was light and liquid, and sound, and the different elements burst forth, ever further condensing and becoming more solid, more dense, more crude, and eventually into solid matter. And in the solid form, that's considered the first half of evolution, from pure consciousness descending down into slowly denser and denser forms of creation until you have matter itself. And pressure is forming on that solid matter. And so you can think of this whole thing as a circle. So the first half of the circle, you start at the beginning of infinite pure consciousness coming down. So at the bottom half of the circle, you've gone halfway around the circle, you get to solid matter. And pressure builds and builds until there's only two possibilities. One is, the sense of the word is Jadasporta, which is a supernova. When the pressure builds up so intensely on matter, and we see cases of this where the stars explode into a supernova. And other option, and the pressure got, so that's where life got formed. So at the bottom of the circle, we get the beginning of life, which was at first, you know, just a unicellular. And the way, they go into huge detail of first, there was, as a cosmic mind descended towards the material plane, first there was this I feeling in the universe that I exist, and then that I am, and then that I am that thing, and then they started the fundamental building factors of the solid universe. So first with the ethereal factor, and then the aerial factor, then the luminous factor, then the liquid factor, and then the solid factor. And first there's space for anything to exist, which is the ethereal factor. So aerial factor is the next element after that, and that's why sound is so powerful. It travels through the air, and it is one of the most subtle of expressions, and therefore that's part of the explanation of why mantra, and in yogic meditation, you'll repeat a mantra, and you'll repeat it in your mind, in your mind voice, and it's such a subtle expression in that aerial factor. It's after air comes light, and then liquid, and then solid. So besides space for things to move through, the aerial factor is the one where the most subtle vibrations can travel through. And so now starts a traveling of the going back up. So that first descent to the bottom, first half to the bottom of the circle, so you get to the expression of life, then begins the circle moving up in ever more complicated and developed forms of life. So, in all this course of millions of years to develop, and it's all happening due to clash and cohesion, that there's forces that are causing us to grow and develop. develop, and that's the clash that we have in our life, in our environment. Change happens through this clash and cohesion. So first we have a challenge, and then we come together to face that challenge. And that's the ever-evolving force that allows the universe to go on its journey of evolution. And so more and more developed forms of life evolve, and consciousness becomes greater. And until you get to human is a very unique place in the cycle of creation. It's very close to the top of the circle again. And our role is to bridge that gap and to return to discover our true original nature. So from the bottom of the circle, all the different forms of life are said to be guided by nature, which is in the flow of the cosmic mind, that there's this guiding flow of the universe. But human has free will, and we can decide to devolve or evolve, you know, according to our nature and our desires and how we to live our life. So the more we can expand our mind and discover our true nature, go through a process of purification and expansion and returning to that state of oneness, that completes the cycle. And you can think of life as a hide-and-seek game that's being played, where we forget why we're here, we forget what's going on, and there's an awakening, a remembering, a learning. Life is a mystery school, and you are taught different lessons, and so it's a whole different outlook than in the West of, you know, whoever owns the most material possessions win, kind of materialistic flow that's going on in a lot of the world at this day and age. And I want to explain some basic concepts. There's an idea of, people have heard of karma, and that's a simple scientific proven principle that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So, you know, this is 100% proven in science on the physical level, but it's also true on the emotional and spiritual level and all different, in all aspects of life. And karma actually means action. It just means action. And what actually humans, when they think about something happening to them that feels karmic, it's a stored karma. So every action produces a reaction. That stored reaction is called a samskara. So samskaras are whatever we do, whatever we think, our mind stuff, which is called citta in Sanskrit, it takes the shape of what we're thinking and our actions and our thoughts, and they produce different results. And so those shapes that our mind gets pushed into, get stored. Our actions, the reactions to our actions are all stored. If you go to a bank and you take out a loan, then you have that loan stored in your credit account. And at different times, it will have to be paid off. And as you know, with loans, if you wait a long time, it builds up. So these different things go through different stages of having different coming to fruition and different maturing and different times when they burst forth and need to be expressed. And part of what we do in meditation is to straighten out these samskaras, to burn the samskaras, to offer them up, to go through a process of clearing out our mental garbage can, all those impressions. All day we're completely engrossed in the physical world, and we can let go and return to a more opened up and freer space through meditation and through our relationship with the universal mystery. So, and another concept people have heard of is Dharma. That's the Eastern word roughly for spirituality. It's human Dharma, to discover yourself, to understand your true nature, and human nature is to awaken and realize its soul, its deeper unity with all things. And so the nature of water is to pour down a hill, the nature of fire is to burn. Everything will have an innate nature. And when humans go against that, there's animal nature that humans share with animals, and animals and humans share basic traits of needing to eat and sleep and procreate. And those are, aspects of the animal consciousness, which is in us, but we have something higher where the human Dharma is to expand the mind. There's Vistara is the Sanskrit word for that, and Rasa, flow, to be in the flow of the universe. When you can make your life and mind in parallel with the universal flow, then you can resonate with that greater unity that's there. And then service. So much, particularly a lot of Western New Age spirituality, has become very narcissistic, very selfish-oriented, and is often mocked for kind of good reasons for how self-absorbed people come, when it's actually the opposite. I mean, expansion of mind takes you out of yourself, takes you, opens your heart, makes you realize that you're no different than anyone else, and that another person's suffering is also, you're connected to that, and it naturally inclines you to do service and to serve the universe, to serve every person, every animal, every thing here on this world as an expression of that divine. And so service is a fundamental part of this spiritual dharma, higher dharma, and then to become liberated, self-realized, to realize your true nature. And it's said to be like a drop of, when a drop of water merges in the ocean. So when your unit consciousness dissolves in the ocean of infinite consciousness, there's no longer an attachment to, you see the bigger picture and your larger connection to everything. And in the East, there's always been a melding of this division between psychology and philosophy doesn't really exist. They're all wisdom traditions, and you can't, philosophy is always applied. It's not just some abstract thing for philosophy books that people in college study or things like that. It's books of wisdom. And so self-knowledge is the goal of all philosophical traditions, at least. And Buddhism arrived in India. Buddha was in fact a yogi. He studied meditation and yoga, and one time he studied a very ascetic version of that, where they mortify their body and demonize the body and try to punish the body, and he realized that was extreme. And so he was actually a Buddhism as a reform movement within the yogic tradition of being sure to take the middle way, not to be extreme, and the importance of balance in life. And so I said earlier, you know, meditation is the main aspect of yoga in the West. People often don't realize that. They think of yoga as going to the gym and exercising. So yoga asanas, there's 8 branches, limbs of the yoga path, and it's a lifestyle, it's a philosophical system, ethical system, way of living, and the most important aspect to it is meditation. If you're going to transform yourself, it's your mind that's the most important thing. The physical aspects, the physical yoga, called asanas, the yoga postures, are there for you to balance your body and mind and to have good health, which is a foundation for your life. So similarly, in aspects of diet and sexuality, whatever different aspect of life, they just tend to prescribe that one should have a healthy, balanced life in all different ways of life. And so there's nothing, there's no need to over-focus on the, you practice yoga and the physical postures in order to be healthy so that you can do the main work, which is your meditation, which is changing yourself and your mind and your consciousness. And they're all connected. I mean, any division in a way is artificial anyway. As I described, it's an inner science in the way that you go in your inner laboratory and you do your meditation and you see what works for you. You have your own experience, and it's for having experiential spiritual experiences and not a faith-based system of, well, I just believe that on blind faith and I've been told that, I believe in the scripture or whatever. Go in, it doesn't matter what you can believe in, it doesn't matter what faith you are. Everybody can go and drink and develop inner resources, inner connection to your soul, to spirit, to that deeper part of yourself. And just as the gems and precious minerals are down deep in the earth, there's deep things within ourselves, and there's the whole vast universe to explore within ourselves, and it's such an adventure, never ending. And I really love the Jungian model of wholeness rather than translating it as perfection or anything like that. Don't reach perfection, but we become more whole and become who we're meant to be and become our true self. And as you have these experiments and are able to go deep within yourself, skill the layers of the mind and to dive deep into your unconscious and superconscious and penetrate deep within your heart and mind, those precious experiences become your inner wealth that no one can take away, and they sustain you through life and become great resources you can draw on. And because of the experiential nature of the process, it's important to do the experiment and practice In Buddhism, they call the meditation practice the sitting practice. It's putting the effort. Sadhana is the Sanskrit word for meditation, which is the effort, the churning. And so as you build up that muscle, you are able to concentrate better and to dive deep into yourself. It's the difference between reading about it or me talking about it is like reading a menu. And what's important, you can't eat the menu. It's to go in within yourself, develop a daily regular meditation practice. It says it's best to meditate twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. In the morning to start your day and to stay connected throughout your day, and in the evening to de-stress and to get reconnected. And when you have those experiences, they guide you, and you begin to tune in to subtler aspects of life and yourself and the outer world, and it's a joyous journey. They talk about three main paths in yoga, and there's the path of the intellect, trying to figure things out through your mind. It's called jnana, the intellectual path. And there are certain people who are just brainiacs, extremely brilliant people that we tend to see in philosophy departments or this or that. You know, they devote their whole life to absorbing books and knowledge and stuff. And it's quite rare to have that kind of mind. And then there's doing service. It's another path, karma yoga, it's called. Through selfless action, helping others and burning your karma through being a vehicle of service for others. And so that's one way, and beginning to see the whole world as an expression of the divine and serving it. And then the third way is called bhakti yoga. It's the path of the heart, and it's said to be the easiest because our mind gravitates to song emotionally. You know, when you love something, you become obsessed with it, and it's easy to think about it. And similarly, when we fall in love with that divine aspect, that attractive force, it's like a magnet. We have this infinite longing within us, and we long to return to that infinite source. And all the limited things don't fill us up. You know, as much food and sex and possessions you have, you can't have it all. And so we're never satisfied in that way. And ultimately it becomes a bit self-destructive because we're a limited being and you can only own so much or eat so much or whatever. And you're trying to satisfy an unlimited desire with a limited thing. So it's a misplaced hunger in a way. And it can be solved with spiritual longing. It's quenched with spiritual realization and that connection. And as you move in a devotional flow through, it's sort of like when you like somebody, if somebody is like the assistant to the magician has his tricks that he does. And he might have a faithful an assistant who really follows him around and helps him out all the time and is so dedicated and loyal that he can kind of show his assistant some of the secrets of the tricks. And so it's like this, that there's the puppet master pulling the strings. You develop a special relationship with that, and you have this, as you move towards that oneness, there's a magnetic longing, spiritual longing that moves one's life forward, and all the great mystical poets, Rumi and Kabir and Tagore, you know, that is filled, Mirabai are filled with this amazing poetry of how their heart yearns for them to be with their beloved. And it's drawn like a moth to the flame. And the closer you get, the more painful it is, because there's such a strong desire to merge. And any separation becomes intolerable. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful path. And ultimately, what one finds is it's best to do all three of these versions. It's needed to educate your mind and give it food, part of the yama and jiyama, niyamas, do's and don'ts of yoga, the moral principles of 10, 5 each of yamas and niyamas, do's and don'ts. And so one of the things to do is to read an elevating, something elevating every day to give your mind psychic food, psychic pebulum to chew on, something to think about of why you're here and what's going on, the true meaning of life. You can think of it as we're on a train and we're going towards our destination. You start looking out the window and you get so absorbed in what you're seeing out the window that you forget that your train is on a journey to a certain place. And you get off the train and end up totally forgetting about why you were, why and where you were going. So similarly, we all can combine educating ourselves and then also practicing selfless service and that compassion and action, seeing our connection and oneness to all things. And then also having the path of the heart and falling in love with the universe as teacher, universe as divine lover, as someone you're playing hide and seek with, someone who has bestowed this universe on you and given you the chance to play this game and do this dance. And those are some of the principles I wanted to go over. A little bit more about meditation. In these yogis sat in caves for thousands of years experimenting with sound and the effect that sound had on the mind. That's how they developed the Sanskrit language, and Sanskrit language is very fascinating. It has 50 different letters that correspond to the 50 propensities. They're called vrittis in Sanskrit, these expressions of the mind. The level of detail yoga and psychology is amazing. So they map out the chakras that are the psychic nervous plexus along the spinal column, and they're said to be different petals, that are the location, petals of lotuses is the image. Each of these nerve plexus, they're like where railroad crossings, where intersections of nerve wiring come together, and there's 7 main ones starting at the base of the spine, around the genital areas, the solar plexus, in the heart center, your throat, in your forehead, between your eyebrows, third eye area, and the crown chakra at the top of your head. So these areas contain different expressions of the mind, and There's an innate spiritual energy that can be awoken that's described as the Kundalini, and particularly that's some of the importance also of having an awoken mantra, the power of a empowered mantra to raise your Kundalini, that it's described as a serpentine, a coiled snake at the base of your spine. It's the consciousness slowly rises up as we draw it up through our spiritual practice and longing, that we do work on raising our energy. So in the lower chakras are the more base propensities, and the first chakra has a lot to do with survival and fear and tribe and belonging. And the second chakra with creativity and different desire nature. And third chakra has a lot to do with power and will. And the fourth, heart center, this is the bridge. This is where you transition to more expansive propensities, mental, higher functions of love and compassion and connection and desire to help and to feel connected. And in the throat is the discernment between what's real and not, what's lasting and not, be able to speak the truth and discernment quality. And then the inner third eye, the inner sheet of insight, the sixth chakra. Chakra means spinning wheel, too. These are said to be wheel vortexes of energy. And then the crown, our connection to the entire universe and opening up to the cosmic oneness. And so meditation is a process of raising your consciousness, raising your Kundalini, raising your vibration. Through your nervous system, which is centered in your spine. And as you ideate, your mind takes the shape of what you think about. And so if you think of something very expansive, the mind will elevate in that direction. And in the yogic system, meditation involves a withdrawal from the world. We close our eyes, fold our hands, and sit in a way where we can focus all our extroverted sensory energies inward and bring them into a one-pointed diamond focus, and then after we've brought our energies up our chakras and when we're in our higher centers, particularly in our heart center and our third eye center, we'll focus and repeat a mantra that has an ideation, has a meaning that's very expansive. And you think about that as you meditate, that deeper meaning. You think about it, you listen to the subtle sound of the Sanskrit mantra, which was developed with a particular sound vibration that expands your mind and has a particular force with it. It's like a magnetic force. It's charged with a spiritual energy. And we say it in a particular rhythm, and that the mind is always moving, and so this allows the mind to get entranced into a particular rhythm, and we connect that with our breath. And while ideating and thinking of the meaning and repeating the mantra in a very focused way with in the rhythm and with the listening to the their inner voice. It's a very subtle sound expression. We're not even saying it outside with the crude senses of the ear. And it's our mind guiding it, so it also strengthens your mind, strengthens your will. And you move towards merging into the universal consciousness. So again, like a bead of oil sliding towards that ocean where a drop of salt gets dissolved, the water into the ocean becomes one with that ocean and no longer feels its separation. And the goal is to keep that connection as you move through your life. So you practice your sadhana, which means effort, bring the effort to polish the mirror, to reflect the soul's rays, the higher consciousness, and your churning and purifying process, like churning milk into butter, putting that effort, and great thing about the doors of perception. In yoga, there's many different disciplines of living a principled and disciplined life in your diet and moral practices and various things to live a balanced and a life that's beneficial to you and to others, to stay in balance and harmony. And to move on that journey of elevating your consciousness and connecting that to why you're here and to do your part in serving those around you, serving creation, the plants and animals and the whole world. And feel free, if you're a guest listening, if you want to press one to get in the caller queue or to type a question in the chat room to anybody that wants to talk, feel free to do that. And there's when you go, say you come home and you're going to practice meditation, you'll need to transition from, you know, whatever, being stressed out and traffic and this or that. So there's different practices you can do, doing some yoga postures and chanting. There's a dance you can do with chanting called kirtan, where you basically step from side to side and lift your hands in the air and kind of a opening up, like a flower opening to the universe, and it's also kind of a surrender position. And it's a natural position of joy. You'll see when anybody wins something amazing or is in a state of ecstatic, you know, they throw their hands up. And do you have someone here? So I'll go ahead and unmute you. Hi there. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you? Yeah, I can hear you. How are you?
All right. Pretty good, pretty good. I actually came late onto this. I was actually looking for another blog talk show, and I saw this, so I just automatically went on. I'm very fascinated. I'm Corey, by the way. I'm very fascinated with the science of light and how it pertains to both Eastern, Western philosophy and spirituality in general. And more or less, I've kind of heard of some science from this German scientist called Francis Fritz Popp, and he was basically proved that we are beings of light. Basically, every single cell reaction is emitting small doses of photons. So I'm kind of, what I guess I'm asking is, how do you see the future of physiology, and how would you describe the subtle bodies and how it pertains to yoga and the yogic tantric practices, and how we process consciousness and process light? I mean, I understand the whole seven chakra thing, but it just seems just a little, you know, it's just, I mean, I want to know exactly how it's all kind of working physiologically in terms of, like, science.
Okay, that's an excellent question. There's a correspondence to our auric field and our chakra system. So there's seven subtle bodies that compose our aura that are also an expression of and correlate to the chakras. And as beings of light, we are most we start out in a very dense state, not realizing that nature of light. And as you kindle your light within and allow that flame to burn brighter and to in meditation, you can think of that as a practice of blowing on those embers and resonating. Again, the mind takes the shape of that which it thinks of. And so if you think of pure consciousness, if you think of infinite consciousness without objects, of our true higher nature or the universal being that we come from and that we're all part of, then you start to transmute some of that denser energy. And the reason this show is called The Science of Light is actually, that's the literal translation of Jyotish, which is the Eastern form of astrology. And I'm a Vedic astrologer, and I also practice both Western and the Indian system. And I do it from a Jungian perspective. I love Jung's way of particularly thinking of light, of rather than imagining imaginal beings of light bring the light to those darkened areas within us and illuminate our own darkness so that we can truly see who we are and we can truly own every part of ourselves and become embodied, enlightened, you know, some people even say, you know, in darkening, you know, it's owning our shadow side. A light will always produce a shadow. And so in a way, the bigger the light, the bigger the shadow. And it's important to realize that every person and every organization has a shadow. It has a darker side, a side that's hidden from itself, a side that it's not necessarily proud of and wants to hide from those that it presents to. And it may hide from those aspects in and of themselves. And that's the real spirituality of the second half of life, when you've developed enough ego strength to be able to be honest with yourself and really begin to do true shadow work and understand your own true flaws and faults and how they can be owned, and also the parts of yourself that you've rejected and that you demonize and deny and that haven't had a chance to develop due to that, and feel like inferior parts of ourselves and parts that aren't accepted in a society and all those different things. But particularly with the auric field, as we do, meditation is also in yoga you can learn different practices of purifying your chakras, and allow you to cleanse and open up and clear out your chakra and aura field, the energy you carry. And one of the ways I like to do meditation, and I often tell people there's no one way, and it's an experiment you're doing in your own inner laboratory, and it's good to experiment and to find out what works for you. But a nice meditation, let's say in the morning, is just to go into the each. Just put your mind, first at the base of the spine, at your first chakra, then at your second chakra, your third chakra. Just come up along the spine to each chakra, and to let yourself see what the energy is like there on that, each morning. And then, is there any energy that you want to let go? You can just send it down your grounding cord. It's nice to do grounding meditations and to be able to hook up to the earth's energy and to release your energies into the earth. It can recycle those. And so you can just kind of clear out each chakra if you feel any blocks. And it's just a nice way to check in and to see, does this chakra feel different today? How does it feel different than yesterday? And you start to develop a map. And I normally feel my heart open to this level, and today it feels cloudy and heavy, and what's that about? And that's why journaling is another great practice for doing this. And there's also the layers of mind. It's another level of thing that goes on with this. So our first layer of mind is dominated by our instincts, and second layer is more related to the intellect, and third layer is a little bit higher rationality and intuition for memory. And then you get in the fourth or level, you get into a more awakened consciousness and expanded consciousness state. And the fifth layer is cosmic universal spiritual experience, the union with the infinite, the cosmic energy, the kundalini awakened blissful experience state of mind. And there's a whole field. It's good for people to Google biopsychology, or particularly like yoga and biopsychology. There's a whole ton of books, and this is the real mind-brain-body system that in meditation you're meant to ultimately understand everything from the level of glands and hormones and nerve cells and lymph and the sensory and motor organs and the mind and body system and how they interplay. So it is a huge and vast topic, and a beautiful journey of exploration that's really worthwhile going on, and the never-ending journey. And it's a journey that some people are scared of introspection, and that's kind of like the main reason a lot of people don't meditate. It's scary to go inside, and but it gives so much value to life to take that journey. And there's a paradox that the ego it's dissolved as it merges in this infinite consciousness. So there's a kind of surrendering of the lower self to the higher self that takes place. And, you know, there's so much that's beyond our understanding. And so in the journey, again, that's the beauty of the devotional path, where you love life and you love the creator and creation, and you feel that attraction of that infinite love, and you move towards merging into that true self, higher self, true nature, into that flow. And that awakened heart gives one the ability and the courage also then to take that dive where there'll be some fear of holding on with the more egocentric consciousness. And at the same time, I love the Jungian value that it places. They kind of use the word ego in a different way in Jungian psychology, because they describe the ego as just the conscious mind that is controlling things. And it's just, you know, maybe 1% is the tip of the iceberg, and we're all so much more. But our conscious identity is a very valuable, and it's important to have a strong ego strength to be able to function in this world. And as we do different spiritual practices and live in a more balanced and harmonious way, it actually strengthens and gives you a strong, healthy ego, which is a totally necessary and good thing. And yoga is about developing yourself on all levels, and to understand the deeper nature and the necessity of all of them, and that movement towards wholeness. So I'll delve into this more in future programs. I'm here every Monday night. Check out my website, which is randygoldberg.org or astrodc.com. And I do astrology readings, where you can get both the Western and Vedic chart readings. I combine them both and give people both perspectives coming from a Jungian point of view on things, and $80 for an hour reading, and I do that by phone, Skype, however. So thanks for tuning in, and
is this love flooding to me in a dream. Is this love, filling all my life with meaning? I thought that you were far away from me, but tonight I feel no distance. I see you standing in the clear sky, as I touch you to reach on high. Let my heart stay still. A sweetness in the near distance. Words I thought to utter now lie still, and in my mind just thoughts of you. Is this love? Is this love? Is this love? Flowing through me in dreams. Soft wind takes my heart by storm. I find the stillness at the center, and pass through worlds I never dreamed of. I see you come and let the darkness die. I love to call you in the morning. A light that's forming in the clear sky touches my heart like mind to reach on high. A love more than you can imagine. We'll not hear the voice of reason. The joy is echoing around me. And all you've done I thought was smile. Is this love? Is this love? Is this love? Floating to me in dreams. Is this love? Is this love? Flowing through me in dreams. Is this love? Is this love?
Babanam Kevalam, Babanam Kevalam.